Welcome to the 11KPW podcast, an update on senior managers and certification regimes by Tom Ogg. This talk was given at the 11KPW Employment Law Conference on the 16th of May 2016. For more podcasts and information, please visit 11kpw.com.
Well, and if you have heard me talk about this before, apologies in advance. What I'm planning to do in this session is give a sense of where we are with this regime. And because although it's a new regulatory regime, it involves some invasive measures into the employment lawyer's patch, particularly as regards references, which I'll be talking about a fair amount at the end. And the second reason is that at the moment, particularly, it's quite complex, and frankly, I find myself querying whether this particular bit applies to this type of firm on a fairly regular basis. So I'm going to try and give you a sense of where we are. And to those of you for whom this is pretty much irrelevant, except perhaps as taxpayers, apologies. So this gives you a sense of where I'm going. Most of this applies only to banks, so that's firms that you can open a savings account with, or that you can open, they're an investment firm, one of the big 11 or so, and there's a list of them in my paper. The references issue, this applies to both insurers and banks, and as I'll come to explain, I think it has ramifications for everyone in the financial services industry. So this is, in part, the complex bit. Which regime applies to who and how? Well, the senior managers regime and the senior insurance managers regime has now come into being as of the 7th of March. So these two bullets here, these two new bits, they're now in force. So for those deposit takers and the big investment banks, they have something called the senior managers regime for the people at the top of the bank, and then many other people will be in a certification regime, which I'll explain in a minute, and then everyone else at the moment doesn't have much to worry about, but they will do in due course. Insurers, they have a new regime that applies at the top, the senior insurance managers regime, but for the most part, for everyone else, it's much the same. There's no certification regime, for example. There's no criminal offence, and so on. So some important changes at the top for insurers. And everyone else, independent financial advisors, consumer credit firms, they're pretty much unchanged right now. However, the Bank of England and Financial Services Act 2016 received royal assent a week ago or so. And what that does is it takes bullet point number one and it applies it to everyone in the financial services industry. So the insurers are going to have to morph again into a new regime. And all these other firms, of which there are tens of thousands, are going to have to take on the senior managers regime, the sort of full fat regime that involves certification for the middle people and the allocation of responsibility for the senior managers regime at the top. So I hope that gives you a kind of broad sense of what applies to who in a very big picture way. And then what this slide is about is the banking regime only and who's who. And this slide, in fact, belongs to Clifford Chance. I have borrowed it from Alistair Windass's presentation. And the point it makes, well, and better than my previous version of this slide, is that there's a hierarchy. The people at the very bottom, who are ancillary staff, they don't really have any regulatory worries, or they won't do in future. Many people who don't have a strictly speaking regulated role, these relevant persons, they'll have the conduct rules that apply to them. So they'll have certain duties, breach of which could lead to the regulators taking action against them. So they must act with integrity and so forth. And then certified persons. Now, the significant difference for them as compared to what was is that who decides whether those individuals get to work in a particular firm has changed. So up until recently, it was the regulators who had a perimeter fence, and the regulators decided who gets in and who doesn't, and there are lots of spats with the regulator as to whether a particular individual gets in or not. Under certification, it's for the firm to decide at the moment, for the banks to decide, whether those people are fit and proper to work in those roles. And that obviously has all sorts of difficult employment law implications, because it's the firms that are taking the decision, and if they make it in a way that an individual doesn't like, they're going to be looking for a cause of action to attack those decisions. And then finally, you've got your senior managers up at the top. This is my timeline, which has changed a lot over time. A few points to pick out here. I'm going to be talking about general counsel later on in this presentation, and references where there have been significant developments of late. 7th March 2016 is where it all came into force for banks and insurers. And what we're expecting in the future is, first of all, there are important rules on whistleblowing, which are going to come into force in September of this year. So at the moment, these firms, both banks and insurers, should have someone called their whistleblowers champion or some other similar name, and there'll be someone at board level, and their job is to oversee what will be a new whistleblowing unit, and that unit has to receive concerns and then escalate them appropriately. So there will be project management programs going on in these firms at the moment to make sure that that's done efficiently and appropriately. What you need to know is that in these firms, settlement agreements will have to contain a certain clause, which is set out in the various policy statements, and it will have to say something along the lines of, nothing in this agreement prevents you making a protected disclosure. Now, that, of course, reflects the position under the Employment Rights Act anyway, but it's a regulatory requirement that such a clause exists. They've also banned certain warranties, which were sometimes put into settlement agreements in order to get around certain requirements. So, for example, a warranty that an individual knows of no matters that could form the basis of a protected disclosure. A warranty like that is now banned under the new rules. So that's something important that's coming into place. In a year from that 6th March date, certification must be completed. So at the moment, banks are looking at their population of certified persons, deciding who's fit and proper and who's not, and then they have to do that annually. And then the conduct rules, those you must act with integrity type rules, they'll apply to most people with a financial services function by 2017. And as I say, the date that we're expecting this regime to go and apply to all firms is in 2018. We don't know whether that's accurate or not, because we have to wait for the regulators to produce consultation papers to explain how it will proportionately apply according to the Treasury. So there's a great deal still to be done before that's finalised. Now, this slide is my slide about the senior managers regime and how responsibility has to be allocated amongst the senior managers in a firm. And the bottom line is this. It has to be clear who's responsible for what. And the what is set out in the regulator's rules. So it's been quite challenging for a lot of firms to actually work out who is, in fact, responsible for what. And there's a detailed and complicated regulatory regime explaining how to do that. The short point is there are certain roles that firms have to have, and it's clear what those roles' responsibilities are. And then there are a series of responsibilities that are floating around that have to be allocated to senior managers. And that's how the regime works. And those floating responsibilities are called prescribed responsibilities. Now, those responsibilities have to be recorded in an individual level document called a statement of responsibility. So each senior manager will have one document that says, in this firm, I'm responsible for blah, 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 and here's a little bit about how it works. And then there has to be a firm-wide document called a responsibilities map for a firm, for a bank, or a governance map for an insurer. Now, this quotation I've got here, Tracy McDermott, she was the head of enforcement, currently the head of the Financial Conduct Authority, and she was speaking to the Treasury Committee in Parliament recently and talking about how the senior managers regime is going to work. And she emphasises that the main problem is there's been a lack of clarity about who's responsible for what. And then she goes on to talk about what they'll be looking for in firms in future. Because what the regulators are relying upon is that it will be clear in future who is responsible for what. What happens if it is in fact unclear who's responsible for what? Well, under the regime, there's one senior manager whose job is to make sure that those documents, the statement of responsibilities and the responsibility maps, are up to date. So if the regulators find, oh, well, that changed 6 months ago and that's not really accurate and so on and so forth, then the regulators are not going to be pleased, and I strongly suspect there will be some regulatory disciplinary action on that basis. So for those of you who advise firms who have these requirements attached to them, sometimes it can be very significant who's been involved in the project to put this regime in place. If it's the chief exec, who in fact has the overall responsibility for making sure who's responsible for what, they may not realise the significance of being responsible for that and the potential problems that could arise if those documents aren't up to date. And I've certainly met some CEOs who have been somewhat surprised to see, oh, Mr. Compliance has allocated me that. Oh, right, well, we'll change that, thanks. So I think there are some potential problems down the line for some senior people. A few short points about the senior manager's regime. You may have heard at some point about a reverse burden of proof that was going to apply to senior managers, and that was called the presumption of responsibility. Well, that's gone as of October last year, and it's been replaced in the 2016 Act I talked about by a duty of responsibility. Now, the various elements are set out there on the slide, suffice to say, it's difficult to see what's new about this new duty, because one of the conduct rules, SM3 down there, essentially says the same thing. So we'll see whether this is of any significance at all when the regulators tell us what they think of it. I should also mention there's a criminal offence. It is a paper tiger in the sense that I doubt anyone will manage to fulfil the elements of this offence. One decision causing a bank to fail is quite unlikely. So I think this is about politics rather than convictions. Now, on to the General Counsel. The FCA recognised recently that there was some uncertainty in the industry as to whether a bank's General Counsel had to be a senior manager or not. And now, if they're a senior manager, then they have a series of duties set out in the conduct rules, and they have that statutory duty of responsibility to take reasonable steps to ensure that there's not a regulatory contravention in their area of responsibility. And the question was, if they're a senior person fulfilling this definition here, they're ultimately responsible for a business area, do they have these regulatory responsibilities? Now, if so, that gives rise to various difficulties. First of all, if the general counsel have to show that they've taken reasonable steps to avoid regulatory contraventions, how are they going to show that except by means of privileged material? Very difficult to see how that's going to work out in practice. And secondly, query whether it compromises their independence, because they have a duty under the SRA rules or the BSB rules to act in a firm's best interests. But if they're a senior manager, they'll also have this reasonable steps duty to avoid contraventions. Now, sometimes there could be some serious conflicts there if, in reality, it's a decision about the extent of compliance versus a bit of profit. So I suspect the outcome of this particular controversy will be that the General Counsel will be a certified person, so they don't have such onerous duties. But this is a live issue that the FCA are taking soundings on at the moment, and lots of General Counsel are concerned about. Notifications. There is a new basis of notification for banks which relates to disciplinary action that's taken. There's a list there of what disciplinary action is, on the basis of a breach of a conduct rule. So as I mentioned, conduct rules are things like you must act with integrity, take reasonable steps to avoid regulatory contraventions or error of responsibility, and so forth. The regulators have integrated that into their existing notifications regime through these various forms that I mentioned in my paper and on the slide. The significance of this, though, is that firms are going to have to apply their mind to these particular regulatory rules. So, for example, it could be very significant whether someone has acted without integrity, and a firm making such a finding, that's a very serious step in respect of an individual. So first of all, firms are going to have to think very carefully about what integrity actually is and how it applies to a particular situation, and they're going to have to think about it with their sort of regulatory hat on. What does integrity mean for the purposes of these regulatory conduct rules? And then secondly, it perhaps imposes some more onerous procedural requirements. So, for example, if a firm is going to have to decide for these notification reasons and reference reasons whether a conduct rule has been breached, then perhaps notice should be given to the employee when they're invited to a disciplinary hearing. In the same way that it's often said, this disciplinary process may result in dismissal, perhaps it should also say, this disciplinary process may result in a conclusion that you breached this conduct rule, because it's a very serious outcome. And finally, references. Now, there's been a rather chaotic process by which the current rules have emerged. So in October last year, there were some very radical proposals by the regulator. A large number of individuals and firms provided feedback, including through ELA, identifying lots of problems with it. And then in early February, in a chaotic way, the regulator said, well, okay, look, this is too difficult. We're going to think about this some more, and here are some interim rules. And what I'm going to tell you about are the interim rules and what I think their significance is. And there will be some final rules sometime later this year, perhaps September, we'll see. So the current rules, so what the FCA did was essentially say, well, okay, we're going to keep the status quo. And it's set out there. And the bottom line is, if you're about to employ someone, so far as the FCA is concerned, you don't have to go out and seek references, at least for regulatory reasons. But if someone asks you about a previous employee of yours, then you have a duty to, as soon as reasonably practical, give the firm all the information of which you're aware. And the bottom line here is, you must give fuller references, more complete references. And the reason why that's significant is because there has been a tendency in some parts of the financial services industry, particularly for more junior employees, to provide the limited reference, the reference that reads, Joe Bloggs worked for our firm from X until Y, and our policy is not to provide any more information. And I think the bottom line from all of this, probably for all firms, but particularly banks and insurers, is that that limited reference is probably no longer permissible under the regulatory regime. And the rules are much the same as they were before. The important point, though, is what the regulator is making of them. The regulator really means provide all relevant information when you're giving a reference. So even though in some respects the rules don't look all that different, the interim rules, I've certainly seen firms taking a much more robust view in terms of references. So if you act for an individual and you're negotiating an exit, I've seen a number of times recently, everything seems to be going swimmingly, and then at the last moment you say, oh, and the agreed reference, and the bank says, well, obviously we have to provide quite a detailed reference because of the new attitude of the regulators. So if you act for individuals, you need to be aware of that. That's probably going to be a problem. And obviously, if you act for firms, they're going to want to have a sense of what the current attitude of the regulators is. Okay. Now, the Prudential Regulation Authority, the Bank of England, in effect, took a little bit more of a robust view in relation to references than the FCA. Essentially, they said, well, certainly for senior people, you should be taking up references anyway, so we're going to, in our interim rules, say you have to take up references, and we're going to make some rules about that, and we don't think that's a problem. So these are the two crucial rules, and there's an additional one that applies to insurers that doesn't really add a great deal. The first one is, before deciding whether someone is fit and proper, so that means before you decide for a senior manager to apply to the regulator for them to take up the job or to give them a certificate under the certified persons regime, you have to obtain appropriate references for at least the past 5 years. It was 6 years under the previous proposal, so that's shortened slightly. But it means that these firms, these big firms, banks and insurers, will have to go out and get references, and 5 years worth of references. And then obviously when they receive them, they'll have to consider them. And then there's a second rule about giving references when asked for them. And the underlined words there under number two that firm must provide all information of which the firm is aware that is relevant to the assessment of whether that person is fit and proper. Now, what does fit and proper mean? Well, there's some guidance from the PRA and there's some more detailed guidance from the FCA in a section of the FCA handbook called Fit. And it's, frankly, a very open-textured assessment and quite broad-based. And generally, the crucial thing will be, has there been disciplinary action taken against this individual? Have there been indications that someone is not competent? Is there a question about their financial soundness? So in giving references, there's a stronger rule that applies. Now, just stepping back at the moment for everyone else in the industry, apart from the obligation to go out and get references, the rules, the interim rules, aren't that different for everyone else in the industry who these consultations don't affect. So I suggest, given all the regulatory attention given to references at the moment, that even in a firm that's unaffected by all these recent changes, a independent financial advisor, a consumer credit firm, they should be thinking more seriously about getting rid of the limited reference because the regulators are looking at this. And it has been known, for example, that a firm provides a limited reference, the receiving firm complains to the regulator and says, what is this? I can't decide whether they're fit and proper based on this. And then the regulator knocks on the door of the reference-giving firm and says, come on, we need all relevant information. So this is something that the regulators are focused on at present. Here is the additional rule for insurers. I don't think it changes things all that much. Now, what are we expecting later on when these final rules come into place? Well, there are some significant record-keeping requirements that there may be data protection implications for. A longer period in respect of references must be asked for. There was a proposal that these reference requirements should apply to internal rules. So if you've already recruited someone and then they get promoted, but you didn't take up proper references when you took them on in the first place, then you'd have to, at that point, take up references from their previous firms if the relevant time hadn't passed. So that may come into effect, or it may not. The regulators are thinking about that at the moment. There was to be a mandatory template, and this was structured in such a way that you would have to say whether you knew of any matters, whether the firm knew of any matters that went to fitness and propriety. You couldn't just leave it blank. You had to positively state whether you had any such knowledge. And the way this was to be structured was, again, around the conduct rules. So I talked a bit about those in relation to these new notification requirements. But this looks likely to be another reason why firms, when disciplining individuals, are going to have to think about the relevant regulatory requirements and whether they have been breached in relation to the alleged misconduct. And they'll have to do that for the purposes of later on providing a reference, because at the point at which they have to provide a reference in however many years' time, they'll have a regulatory obligation to say whether any of those regulatory rules were breached during that disciplinary action. So that may involve quite a significant change of thinking about how disciplinary action is taken within firms, because they're going to have to think about the regulatory consequences. And then the other alarming proposal was a requirement to update a previously given reference. So if you had given a reference to some other firm, but then you subsequently found that the employee in question had been involved in misconduct, and that misconduct was significant in relation to their fitness and propriety, then the proposal was you'd have to send an updated reference to whomever you gave the reference to in the first place. Query whether that will continue under the new proposals, which we'll hear about later this summer. Yes, there are some of the reasons why the regulator found it all too difficult, and they were good reasons why they found it a bit difficult. And that's it from me.